This podcast is brought to you by Recontract, the leading software to automate your reconditioning process and streamline your entire used vehicle management process. Visit recontract.com to learn more. That's recontract.com.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/dailydrivepromo to redeem. Welcome to Daily Drive for Tuesday, March 19th, 2024. I'm Jamie Butters, Executive Editor of Automotive News here in Detroit.
And I'm Kellen Walker in Las Vegas. Today on the show, a major win for automakers as the U.S. gets set to finalize rules for EV mileage ratings. Auto execs are bracing for big disruptions from EVs and software shifts. And Nissan is offering some dealers cash to accept more cars and trucks. Plus, will the UAW finally succeed in organizing VW's plant in Chattanooga? Our own Michael Martinez talks about the union's chances.
They've tried. They've gotten a little closer each time, and maybe this third or fourth try here is the charm.
Let's run through all the news you need to know to keep up in the auto industry.
The U.S. Department of Energy plans to unveil final rules that will significantly soften its proposal for electric vehicle mileage ratings for CAFE purposes. That's according to sources that spoke with Reuters. The original proposal would have slashed electric vehicles' mileage ratings to meet government fuel economy requirements in 2027. In April 2023, DOE proposed rules revising its petroleum equivalent fuel economy rating that would have lowered the compliance value of EVs by 72% in 2027. Sources say the final rule will gradually reduce the petroleum equivalent EV fuel economy rating through 2030 and by 65% in total, giving automakers more time to adjust. The decision is a win for the Detroit 3 and the UAW, which raised alarms that the previous proposal could have resulted in U.S. automakers facing $10.5 billion in fines through 2032 for not meeting the corporate average fuel economy requirements.
A large majority of auto executives expect significant or moderate disruption to their businesses over the next year. That's according to a survey of about 300 auto industry executives by consulting firm Alex Partners, conducted in August and September last year. Most executives surveyed said car companies are finding it harder to prioritize which disruptions to address at any given moment. 32% of automaker executives polled expect significant disruption over the next year, with 60% anticipating moderate disruption. About 40% of suppliers see significant change in that time frame, with 50% anticipating moderate change.
With its fiscal year coming to a close next week, Nissan is paying its dealers cash to take vehicles from a backlog of unsold factory inventory. Nissan retailers began receiving emails and calls last week from factory reps offering $500 to $2,000 for every vehicle the dealerships take. Automotive News interviewed 8 retailers across the U.S. Several say they have received cash offers. The retailers, who requested not to be identified, said the bonus money varies by model line and market region. A Nissan spokesperson declined to comment. Some retailers said Nissan's targeted wholesale effort is anti-competitive and damages factory-dealer relations.
And franchise dealers' outlook on used vehicle sales is still at its lowest point since the pandemic. That's according to the Cox Automotive Dealer Sentiment Index for the first quarter. Dealers gave the current sales environment a score of 51 on a 100-point scale. That's the same as in the fourth quarter survey, but 4 points less than the first quarter of 2023. 51 is the lowest franchise dealers have scored the used vehicle sales environment since the second quarter of 2020, during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic in the U.S. In that quarter, it was 43. And those are today's headlines. Jamie, Nissan paying dealers cash to take vehicles from a backlog of unsold inventory. Why has Nissan been making such unusual moves lately?
Yeah, you know, Nissan has kind of acknowledged they maybe got a little over aggressive in ordering vehicles from the factory. And then they had some, you know, just some glitches, I think some production glitches, but also shipping of getting vehicles up from Mexico. So suddenly they get to near the end of the quarter when they suddenly have a flood of vehicles they need to sell. So yeah, they've been pushing more into fleets, giving dealers discounts to help clear out the 2023 Rogues that are still around, and now trying to pay the dealers to take more inventory, you know, off of Nissan's lots and put them onto their own. It's clearly, you know, a bit of an emergency move, trying to wrap everything up. It looks like they're trying to get it taken care of as quickly as possible, addressing the inventory problem from multiple angles.
Interesting. Coming up, our own Michael Martinez joins the show to talk about the UAW's chances to unionize its first foreign automaker plant. That's next on Daily Drive.
Tesla is no longer a luxury brand. At least that's what we've decided here at Automotive News, but we want to hear from you.
What do you think of our decision to no longer classify Tesla as luxury in our coverage? Send us a voicemail, text, or email. You might hear your comment on this week's Weekend Drive episode. Here's how to get in touch.
Call us and leave a voicemail or text us at 313-444-2774. Again, that's 313-444-2774. You can also record your voice on your smartphone and send it to dailydrive@autonews.com. That's dailydrive, one word, at autonews.com.
And tune into our Weekend Drive episode this weekend, available Saturday morning.
Managing your used inventory is not exclusive to one person or one part of the dealership. What does the communication look like between sales and service? Are your vehicles getting passed from trade-in to recon with no hiccups? What is your average cycle time to get a used car frontline ready? There is a lot to keep track of all at once. Right now, you could be experiencing three major issues with your recon information causing process breakdowns. One, lack of visibility into recon pricing to inform the appraisal process. Two, no access to that appraisal information when working through recon approvals. Three, missed information and process bottlenecks trying to manage a vehicle across multiple systems and tools. Full insight throughout your entire process is crucial to making your used car department the most efficient and profitable it can be. Recontract, combined with AutoVision, creates an end-to-end tool for your used car department to address these breakdowns. With access to live appraisal information and reconditioning approvals, you get a single view of every vehicle with all the data you need right in one place. Make more educated decisions on your used car inventory faster with all your data easily accessible at any stage. Visit info.recontract.com/autovision for more information. That's info.recontract.com/autovision.
Welcome back to Daily Drive. I'm Jamie Butters with Kellen Walker. For more than two decades, the UAW has tried and failed to organize non-union U.S. auto assembly plants owned by Asian and European automakers. Most of those factories are in southern states with political leaders who are hostile to unions. But the UAW thinks this time is different. The union says a supermajority of eligible workers at Volkswagen's Chattanooga plant have signed union cards, setting up a third plant-wide unionization election in a decade. The UAW says workers have submitted a request for an election to the National Labor Relations Board. Michael Martinez covers the UAW and Ford for us at Automotive News. He joins me now at our headquarters in Detroit. Michael Martinez, welcome back to Daily Drive.
Thanks for having me.
So glad to have you here. We have important news. You know, the UAW is preparing to hold a vote to organize the workers at Volkswagen's assembly plant in Chattanooga. When is the vote going to be?
We don't know for sure right now. The parties can announce that on their own, which they haven't yet, but the NLRB did say that if they don't announce that, there's going to be what they call a sort of pre election hearing on March 26th down in Atlanta, which is the region where this would happen. Mm-hmm. And presumably they would set up a timeline then.
Okay. So if we maybe in as little as a week, we'll know what the timeline is going to be when the vote might be held.
Sure.
So this was the site of a pretty close vote as recently as 2019. It's really seen as the UAW's most likely place to find a win, isn't it?
I'd say so. And some of the labor experts I've spoken with believe it's their best chance as well. And when you think back to 2019, it was a razor thin margin. We're talking 776 yes votes to 833 no votes, 48%, 52% essentially. And that was essentially the third time UAW had tried to organize that plant or portions of that plant. So they've tried, they've gotten a little closer each time. And maybe this third or fourth try here is the charm.
I mean, that 2019, you know, in case the audience has forgotten those pre-pandemic days, the UAW was just reeling from the scandal that ultimately led to Sean Fain being elected. But it was at the time, just like every week, every month, more charges coming out about bad behavior, you know, spending tens of thousands of dollars on Palm Springs vacations and, you know, funneling money through family-owned businesses, buying swag they never even delivered, just really atrocious stuff that I think could easily have swayed 30 voters.
I think so. It was very easy for a lot of these anti-union outside forces to hammer home the message that you don't want to be a part of this, do you, VW workers? This is a mess. They don't have to worry about that anymore. And I think a lot of the outside criticism of the UAW in these past organizing drives has been they haven't really engaged the community as much. It's been sort of a top-down organizing approach, and that they needed to really focus on worker concerns, let the workers drive this, and really go from the bottom up. And you have a leadership team in place now that appears committed to do that.
Well, I mean, again, looking back, it was kind of remarkable they were even so close, again, with the scandal at the UAW. And just in general, unions were still kind of in a funk. The labor movement in America was kind of in a funk then. It's always been a struggle to get unions to make ground in the South. And so since then, I mean, things have changed so much with social activism. And I mean, the opinion of unions is at the highest it's been in generations, a new leadership at the UAW that just won a big contract last year. It seems like there's a lot more tailwinds for the UAW to organize.
I think there's a few things that are really working in their favor this time around. And that's, you really can't overstate the importance of what they were able to do this fall with the Detroit 3. Workers everywhere sort of saw that and realized while their wages may be pretty close, while their benefits may be pretty close, they could have more. And they saw how UAW leadership kind of went to bat for the workers and really took it to the Detroit 3 in that unique strike strategy that we spent many hours last fall talking about. But I think more broadly, too, you have this perception by younger people, even by older people, too, that the unions can help them. And you got to think about the economy here, too. Now, it's looking better. Inflation is coming down. But you have a lot of workers who still are feeling the pinch of inflation, and an extra 10%, 5%, whatever that may be, if the union's able to organize and get a collective bargaining agreement, that's an important second step that would need to happen. It could help them out. And also, especially at VW, this plant's been open since 2011. You have many workers that have been there that entire time. That workforce may be starting to age a little bit. And if you're getting into your 40s or 50s versus your 20s or 30s, you know, maybe you might appreciate the healthcare benefits that unionization would bring a little more. So I think those are some of the factors working in the union's favor this time around, but it could still be a tough battle.
Yeah, older workers might appreciate healthcare more and also job security when they probably don't feel as mobile and able to just run out and get another great factory job. But of course, it's not the same people voting in 2024 as it was in 2019. The plant's expanded, they launched an EV, they've got about 1,200 more workers that they didn't have then. We don't know exactly what the population's priorities are, other than what we've heard through the UAW from their organizing drive.
Exactly. And, you know, it would remain to be seen if that added workforce would lean pro-union, would lean, you know, we're fine the way we are. If you think back to, again, the last fall, the Detroit 3 strike, a lot of the younger workers were the ones who most wanted the gains, right? Because they started in either as temporary workers or very low paid full-time workers, and they really want those benefits. And they were the most active and most encouraged to go on strike and sit on those picket lines. So you would wonder if that may be the same case with a younger, newer workforce in the South, but that remains to be seen.
You mentioned the importance of not only winning the election, but actually reaching an agreement. Why do you point that out as such an important step?
Well, first of all, you would need to figure out what exactly you want if the union is going to model a potential collective bargaining agreement the same as the Detroit 3's. And if you go back in history, there was a time in 2015 where the UAW was able to organize Chattanooga, very
part of it.
Tiny subsection of Chattanooga, the skilled trade workers there, they won that election. They never got a collective bargaining agreement because VW did not bargain with them. They stalled and they appealed the decision with the NLRB, and eventually the union just said, never mind, we're going to try for the full plant again. And that's what led to the 2019 vote. So just because you organize doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get a contract. It could be another bitter fight, just as organizing the plant would be. Presumably management would not want to give up the same type of costs that the Detroit 3 are giving up to their union workers.
It's interesting because I think to a lot of Americans, they know that management and the union in Germany work very closely together, although sometimes very confrontationally. It's not that it's all peaches and cream, but they work closely together, whether they're always aligned.
Sure.
But they have a management board that is half labor. So, you know, they're very plugged in and they do meet and talk on a regular basis. I think there's a sense maybe from some in Detroit that it's less confrontational than a UAW versus, you know, the Detroit CEO types, but it may or may not actually be. VW may really prefer to not have a labor partner in the U.S.
Well, what's interesting, and not to get too much in the weeds here, but for our U.S. audience, you also have the works councils over in Germany that VW has for its plants overseas. And presumably, if the UAW were to organize, those workers could then join a works council here in the United States. U.S. law says you have to be unionized in order to be part of a works council. And the works council has certain privileges. They can see the company's books, for example. They're sworn to secrecy, but if VW is saying, hey, we're losing money on this model, here's why we're cutting jobs, they can show members of the work council exactly how much they're losing, and they can understand and maybe not put up a fight, right? And maybe say, okay, we're going to save our powder for something else. So that works council aspect initially led to the first vote at VW, because VW said, okay, we have works councils all over the U.S. We'll have one here, or all over the world, excuse me. We'll have one here in the U.S. too, 2014. Let's set up a vote. Turns out you can't have a works council unless you're part of the union. Republicans in the state didn't like that. They started to push back. It was a big mess. They lost that vote.
One last thing before I let you go. If VW can get this done, and my sense is very much if they can't do it in Chattanooga, they're not going to be able to do it anywhere. But if they can, and if there's a chance that it builds some momentum towards some of the other plants, what do the analysts think is where they might go next? What would be the second or third opportunities for the UAW?
Well, you have opportunities at Nissan. They've tried and failed there, a few different plants in the past. Mercedes-Benz might be the next opportunity as well. They're already at 50% of workers signing cards in support of the union. So they're getting close to that 70% number that would trigger an election. Those could be the best opportunities, again, because you've had elections in the past. And while they've failed, that experience may have shown workers maybe manage everything management promised them in the past. If that didn't come to fruition, maybe that trick, quote unquote, might not work this time. They may be more disillusioned with management and more willing to join a union. You have organizing apparatus already in place because it's happened in the past. So you have at least some group of workers that have voted yes in the past that probably would again. So if they can win in Chattanooga, I would think maybe Mercedes might be the next opportunity.
Well, like you said, greater focus on listening to the local people in the community, maybe having tried and failed, they at least know the people in the community, that the apparatus is there to listen better and focus their marketing, focus their message better. It's all going to be very fascinating. We look forward to your coverage, I guess, year after year. It's no longer just every 3 or 4 years that we're all on the UAW beat, or that you're all over the UAW beat. Mike, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Jamie.
That's Daily Drive for today. I'm Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to Automotive News coordinating producer Jake Neer, as well as our own John Irwin, Irvash Kakaria, CJ Moore, and Jack Walsworth for their reporting for today's podcast. You can get the latest news on UAW organizing efforts, EV mileage rating policies, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
Come back tomorrow for a conversation about what automakers need to do to bring about the next wave of EV adoption.
Now, for us to really go the next step, it's really about understanding not just what the first movers want, the early adopters, but what is that next era of growth going to want?
We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show and the topics we covered today. Send us an email at dailydrive@autonews.com or leave us a voicemail at 313-444-2774. And if you enjoy the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.